Welcome to the Denver Broncos podcast, week two. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are. With you again this week, we have our DenverBroncos.com columnist and guru, Andrew Mason. And we also have myself, Ben Swanson, DenverBroncos.com associate editor. This week, we'll be taking a look back at game one, 31-24 victory, looking at what happened, who excelled, and we'll also be taking a look back at our AFC West division competitors, a full week for everyone, and looking ahead to our week two matchup, which will be against the Kansas City Chiefs, the first division game of the season for the Denver Broncos. The week one win over the Colts was truly a tale of two halves for the Broncos. The first half was marked by a good performance by both the offense and the defense. Peyton Manning had three touchdowns, all to Julius Thomas in the first half, en route to scoring 24 first-half points to the Colts 7. The defense was exemplary. They shut down Indianapolis pretty much after the first drive, and then in the second half, things kind of devolved a bit. The Broncos' offense couldn't really get going, and the Colts started to surge back, and they scored a couple touchdowns, pulled within one score, and then the Broncos' defense held out on fourth down, forcing the Colts to turn the ball over on downs, and the Broncos would kneel and take the game from there. Hakeem Nicks, they got some scores, and all of a sudden there's a couple minutes left, and they have a last-minute drive to try and tie the game. The defense stepped up, and they stopped him on fourth down. One of the things we looked at was the difference between the first and second half. I noticed that the offense had a lot more success in the first half. They converted 6 of their 7 third downs, and in the second half, they converted only 1 of 7, though one of those was the kneel down at the end of the game, so we'll call it 1 of 6. Anything you noticed that changed between the first and second half, Mace?
Well, certainly what you're doing responds to where the game is and where it's flowing. So when you're up 24-7, you know, you're going to try to maybe dial it down, dial down the passing game a bit. You're going to try to run the ball more on first down, and that's an area I look at where the Broncos really need to get some work done. Actually, I wrote about this on DenverBroncos.com late Wednesday about the team's struggles on first down runs in the second half. They were pretty effective running the ball on first down the first half, but part of trying to get that going is, trying to get the run game going is testing it when the opponent knows you're going to run. And, the Colts had a pretty good idea. The Broncos were going to try to run the main to preserve their lead and shrink the game and shrink the comeback opportunity that Andrew Luck and the Colts offense had. So they played the run well, and the Broncos, with a lot of two tight end formations, that was basically their base package in week one, to the point where on the official depth chart that came out after the game, they didn't list three wide receivers. They listed two receivers and two tight ends, which tells you, for the moment at least, and probably as long as Wes Welker is out suspended, what they regard as their base package. And you would have liked to have gotten some more stuff going, and they couldn't. They even briefly tried out for one play, a fullback, and Juwan Thompson, the rookie out of Duke, who's been a backup running back, got a look at fullback. They'd been giving him some looks in camp, and that play went nowhere. Virgil Green in a two tight end formation was used as an H-back in the backfield at times, and there was mixed results with that. So I think the running game, there were some positive things. You touched on the third downs overall. In particular, on the ground, the Broncos went 3 for 3 on third down in a conversion rate. That was a good sign compared to last year when they had some struggles on third and shorts. But first down running, I think, that the struggles there in the second half really kept them from increasing the lead. And because of that, the Broncos were in second and long, third and long. That's why the third down conversion success rate went down overall in the second half, is because instead of having third and two, third and three, they had third and seven, third and eight, third and nine. So, obviously your chances decrease on that. And they couldn't sustain drives, and that gave the Colts the window to get back in. And, and let's, for all that we're talking about this game, if you don't have an onside kickoff that Julius Thomas can't quite get his hands on, we're not talking about this being a game that comes down to a fourth down stop inside of the last 2 minutes. And that's fumble recoveries are statistically random. Onside kickoff recovery is statistically random. So there was a little bit of luck, pardon the pun, some luck involved with the Colts getting back in it.
Speaking of Julius Thomas, he had maybe one bad, well, I guess two bad parts. He had the bobbled kickoff, but he also had a fumble earlier, his first of his NFL career. Other than that, a pretty spotless game for him. He earned the AFC Offensive Player of the Week award. He had 3 touchdowns, 7 catches, 104 yards, and most of that came in the first half. I was talking to Brandon Marshall after the game, and he said the toughest thing about covering this guy is that he's a very precise route runner. He's got great size, great athleticism. How did you see him just take advantage of what the Colts were giving him?
Well, he's exceptionally well-prepared as well, and well-prepared to go against any one of 6 or 7 different defenders. We saw the Colts change up who they had on him. You saw, you know, Laurent Landry, their safety, Jarrell Freeman, and DeQuell Jackson, their linebackers. Other players took their turns. None had any sustained success. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. He's too big for a cornerback to cover, too fast for a linebacker to cover. And the safety, I mean, you've got to be a special safety to have a shot, because you know he's going to be a little bit bigger than a safety. And the other thing that is interesting, if this, let's say a safety has the speed to keep up with Julius Thomas, well, even if he's got a man draped on him, Julius is so good at making those catches in traffic, and he's so good at getting his arms extended. And obviously, I mean, that's one of his great measurables is his wingspan. It's the kind of thing we talk about in basketball more than football. But, you know, stands to reason that Julius Thomas, former basketball player at college at Portland State and a pretty good one, has a nice wingspan. So even if you've got a safety draped all over him, he can reach out, he can make that grab. Just, you know, all these physical tools, and now here we are in year 4 in the NFL for him. He's understanding the mental aspects of the game better. He's understanding the technical aspects of blocking better. That was going to be the last part of his game that rounded into form, simply because he had so little experience, and blocking is a less natural skill set than simply catching the ball. So, you know, it's the sky's the limit for him. If he can stay healthy, I mean, he had the ankle problems the first couple of years, which delayed his breakout until last year. But if he can stay healthy, the sky's the limit for this guy. I mean, I think you have to put him in the elite category, you know, with guys like Jimmy Graham in New Orleans. And maybe Julius has a higher ceiling than Jimmy Graham, just because I think he's a little bit smarter of a player. And I think he's got a little bit better use of his body than Jimmy Graham does, which is saying a lot, because we know how good Jimmy Graham is. It's fun to watch him. He and Peyton Manning have exquisite timing together, and like I talked about with being able to make plays in traffic and make plays with a safety or a linebacker draped all over him. You know, Peyton Manning likes the guys that he can trust to where he can drop it to a specific spot, to where you don't need a big window to complete the pass. And, you know, Julius Thomas is one of those guys. And, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to get 3 touchdowns every week. So if fantasy players, you know, you had a great performance from him on Sunday, maybe you're not going to get quite as many points from him in the future. But, you know, he's a guy that, from that perspective, you start every week, and he's a guy that's going to be in the Broncos game plan every week, because he's just that good.
Looking at the defense here, you know, they had some good moments. A couple players I thought played pretty spectacularly. I mean, you have Raheem Moore coming off of a freak leg injury last year, and he comes out with 2 interceptions. Nate Irving, I thought, did very well getting through the line. You see him get through the A gaps very well against the Colts. Brandon Marshall did pretty well. I think he had 9 or 10 tackles. But then they kind of let their foot off the pedal in the second half, and the Colts got back into it with a couple of touchdowns. Let's talk first about the guys coming back from injury. There's a lot of them, and you have Raheem, you have Derek Wolfe, you have Von Miller, all making their regular season comebacks. Who did you like most out of there, and what do you want to see more from these players?
Yeah, and another guy I mentioned is Chris Harris, and Chris is probably at the earliest stage of his rehab relative to the others. You know, guys like Derek Wolfe, Von Miller, they all got in the field in the preseason, and Chris Harris didn't. And his conditioning is still getting back up to speed. He talked about how after the game he had some fatigue, and that's why he was not out there, particularly late in the game. The last series, you know, Chris Harris, he didn't have his helmet. He was not going back in He wants to work back up to where he plays a complete game. So not having Chris Harris out there for good chunks of the second half, that hurt. Just one of the better cover corners you're going to see in the league. I mean, he just plays so intelligently. I the thing I always like about him is he rarely misses tackles and he doesn't allow many yards after the catch. He's great at minimizing the damage of a play. And so getting him back up to speed will help the defense going forward. Give some credit to the Colts. I thought they were more aggressive in the second half, as you have to be. Obviously when you're down 24-7, I thought they did a great job keeping the Broncos' defense off balance and forcing the Broncos to do some different things. You talked about Von Miller. At times, there was one play I recall when they had the NASCAR package. You're going for four speed guys up front, and that means Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson, two defensive ends in base package, can go inside, and you also have DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller usually working on the ends. But they used this NASCAR package in kind of a funky way. They kept Derek Wolfe outside, had Malik inside, DeMarcus outside, and then Von Miller was actually lined up in the stand-up position over the center a little bit. So you thought, okay, maybe he's going to blitz the A-gap, going to rush the A-gap here, and instead drop back into coverage. In effect, he was a spy on Andrew Luck. So, some of the thing, and that's what a guy like Andrew Luck forces the defense to do, because his feet are just as dangerous as his right arm. So, give the Colts the credit for doing things that kept the Broncos' defense off balance. But this is things you're going to see from other teams as well. You've got a lot of mobile quarterbacks coming up in the next few weeks. Alex Smith from Kansas City, Russell Wilson, Seattle, Geno Smith, a couple weeks after the bye with the Jets, Colin Kaepernick right after that from San Francisco. So I think you're going to see some of these out. You're going to see maybe Vaughn drop and be that spy from time to time. And that's part of his job description. Remember, he's a strong side linebacker by position listing. He's not simply a pass rusher. So, he's going to he has coverage responsibilities. He has responsibilities against the run. It's not all about the pass rush with Von Miller.
You talked a little bit about DeMarcus Ware there. Him and Aqib Talib and T.J. Ward all making their regular season debuts as new pieces of the puzzle after being signed earlier this year in March. I thought that DeMarcus Ware played pretty well. He had a sack and a half, and Talib did pretty well. What did you make of the new guys coming in?
I think DeMarcus has fit in seamlessly, with the guys around him. I mean, his sack and a half. You watch those plays and you watch some of those other pass rushes. He's playing well off Malik Jackson. Like when Malik goes on the inside in a pass rush situation, and Malik will get the interior rush and will almost guide the Andrew Luck or whoever the quarterback is, depending on the game. He'll guide him into DeMarcus Ware's grasp. So I like seeing the two of them working so well together already. We saw some of that in training camp in the preseason as well. Talib and Ward on the back end. Talib had a very good game.
He had that tip to
Raheem Moore. Yes, he did. And working on the outside, it's good. Having him frees up so much because he's the quote unquote shutdown corner. You can put him on one guy, and you can trust him to lock down that area of the field. That does so much else for the rest of the defense. It allows the safeties to be more active because you're not worried about that side of the field that Aqib Talib has. So you can drop Raheem Moore as the single high safety downfield and just basically have him play center field. You can have T.J. Ward come up as the safety in the box, and you can have him be aggressive, and you can have him be involved in the pass rush if you want. You can have him there against the run when you need him, because you know that Talib's going to take care of that side of the field. It's like we used to say about Champ Bailey when he was in his prime here. I mean, that he was – for so long he was that elite lockdown corner. You just said, okay, Champ, you got the left side. Everyone else can focus on the matters, elsewhere in the defense, and it frees everybody up. So, you know, having Tlaib there and then having Ward, you know, able to come into the box and then having and then allowing and then in turn all allowing Raheem Moore to do what he does best, which is, you know, play deep, play on the, you know, play on the back end and be ready and watch for the ball and be ready to make plays on the ball. That's a big part of why he had two interceptions on Sunday. Like Julius Thomas, not, I don't expect him to have that many big plays every week. That's impossible, but certainly, certainly, I think he's gonna have some big plays in him this year, and it opens a lot of things up for the defense.
They let him back in for the second half, but they still got the win by 7 points. And after Monday night's games concluded, we learned that they take control of the AFC West here. We have the Raiders. They lost to the Jets. The Chiefs lost to the Titans. And the Chargers lose to the Cardinals. Looking at the first game here, the Raiders and Jets, both teams not exactly expected to do very well this season. Raiders starting Derek Carr. A rookie, fresh start, but didn't exactly go as they hoped completely.
Yeah, it was a typical rookie quarterback game. I think we've been spoiled to see, you know, league-wide seeing guys immediately, you know, step in at quarterback and deliver big results. This, you know, Carr, if you look at his quarterback rating, it was a 94.7. You'd say, okay, pretty good. An exceptionally conservative game plan. That's they weren't looking downfield a lot. This was, you know, a lot of check downs, a lot of short stuff, which is what you expect for a rookie quarterback. You want to allow him to get his feet wet and build his confidence. You know, you look at the numbers: 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 94.7 rating. It's a good start, but you know, nothing spectacular. They really kept it reasonable for him against a defense that's going to put some pressure on him in the Jets. And, you know, the Jets are, you know, not really well-regarded nationally, and people don't have a high expectation of them this year. But it's still a very good defense that Rex Ryan puts on the field and still a very, you know, very challenging one for him to face. And, you know, so the Raiders kept the game plan within Carr's limits, and he did okay. Oakland's got to run the ball to have a chance. And they didn't do that. I mean, you average 1.7 yards a carry if you're the Raiders with Darren McFadden and Maurice Jones-Drew. Obviously, maybe not two guys who aren't in their prime, but you know, can still deliver some solid production. But when you're going to average 1.7 yards a carry as the Oakland Raiders, you're not going to win the game. So they've got to work on that. Derek Carr is a promising young quarterback, but if he's the only thing that a defense has to take seriously, then Oakland's offense isn't going to go anywhere. So they've got to really work on that running game head into week two.
One of the Monday night games, we had San Diego taking on Arizona. It was a close game. San Diego gave up a bit of a lead there, and they fell by 1 point. Probably the worst loss to come out of that game for San Diego is losing their starting center, Nick Hardwick, put on the IR. They had some promising things, but there were things that they had some trouble with. Former Bronco Eddie Royal had 6 targets, but only 1 catch. Certainly some things they could improve upon there. Overall, not the worst game that you could come out of your first showing with, but I think they were hoping for a W in that first one.
Yeah, two very comparable teams as far as expectation level and overall talent. Both are kind of, you know, can contend for their divisions, but I think if you were making a projection on both, I think you'd say wild card caliber, and I don't think that changed in week one for San Diego. Arizona, despite injuries, still a very tough defense, and a defense that, especially toward the end of the game, you know, gave the Chargers some problems. And the other thing that I look back at that game, you know, the Chargers have had a few changes on defense. You saw them working, you know, Verrett, their rookie corner out of TCU. They were working him in quite a bit. You know, first time out did very well. It was interesting to look at that game, and it was really not the primary targets, but the secondary targets like John Brown that caused San Diego some trouble. And so, you know, maybe you come out of week one, you're a little bit hesitant about being confident in the depth at cornerback for San Diego. That's, you know, that's sort of what I got from that's sort of what I got from it is that maybe, you know, they're going to be strong at the top, but you get down, you drop down further on the depth chart in the among the cornerbacks, and the quality isn't necessarily going to be there. So maybe for the Broncos, there's some things they can exploit. But to get back to Nick Hardwick, you know, he's been their center for a decade, going back to when Drew Brees was their quarterback. It's a crushing loss for an offensive line that is still developing. I mean, they've invested in draft picks in recent years. You know, a couple of years ago, the O-line was a shambles. Last year, it got better, and Hardwick was a solid stabilizing force in that. So, you know, now you're going to count on offensive line leadership coming from some of their other guys. I think they're going to really hope that King Dunlap and DJ Fluker, their left and right tackle respectively, are going to be guys that lead the way for them, because it's going to be a bit of a transition period on that offensive line, and they've got a very tough test this coming weekend against Seattle. You know, that's not the team that you want to face when you've got some offensive line transition going on. So this could be a pretty tough go for him in week two.
And looking back at the last team here in the AFC West, it's the Kansas City Chiefs, our next game opponent. So looking back at their first week, they also took a bit of a tumble. They lost to the Titans, tied for the worst loss point differential for Andy Reid in his time in Kansas City, which isn't saying a whole lot. You know, once he's under his belt, you could do worse than a 16-point loss. But, you know, you had some good things and you had some bad things for Kansas City. 3 interceptions by Alex Smith, not optimal. 7 rushes for Jamaal Charles, not optimal. Dwayne Bowe out with a suspension, not optimal either. And then you have a couple injuries to very key players in Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito. Looking forward, how do they fill those gaps on your defense with those leaders out?
Well, you're going to see Kevin Vickerson, old friend of the Broncos, you know, recently released by them at the final cutdown. They signed Vickerson, but he's not going to step in and start right away for Mike DeVito. They're going to look at Jay Howard. They're going to look at Vance Walker. Both of them are going to see more playing time. I think, you know, DeVito is replaceable. Derek Johnson is not replaceable. I mean, even Andy Reid acknowledged on Wednesday on the conference call with Denver reporters that just he's the caliber of player that you're going to fill in for, but you can't expect that same kind of production. You know, James Michael Johnson is the guy who's going to fill in for Derek Johnson. He can the part of Derek Johnson's game that I think he can replicate is being able to fill the gaps and stop the run, keep run plays from getting the second level on the interior. Of course, it helps that they have Dontari Poe, the nose tackle, who, as I watch the Chiefs, is always my favorite Chief to watch, since he's, you know, especially the last year or so, because of what he can do up front. I don't think there's a better nose tackle in the game right now than Dontari Poe. I mean, it's the array of moves that he has on the inside, how often he has to be doubled up, and how often he still manages to get penetration even when he is double teamed. And Poe freed Derek Johnson up to do quite a bit. You know, he didn't. You know, Derek Johnson didn't have to contend with any guards or centers getting to the next level because Poe was taking care of him. I think James Michael Johnson can make those stops that Derek Johnson would make on the interior. What they're losing is that Derek Johnson was so good going sideline to sideline that when it didn't go up the middle, he could make plays on the outside. You know, you could see him a lot in coverage. You could see him coverage on running backs and tight ends out of the backfield. You could see him even dropping into coverage down the middle. That's what they're really going to lose. And, you know, against a team like the Broncos that likes to get the ball quickly to their outside targets, Derek Jones, and likes to get the ball to their tight ends with Julius Thomas in particular, Derek Johnson was an asset, and they're really going to miss him this coming Sunday, I think.
Injuries aside, how disappointing is a loss for Kansas City to Tennessee like that? You know, Kansas City coming off a playoff berth, 11-5, and losing to Tennessee by that margin is, you know, it's got to be a little disheartening for them.
Well, it's not simply the loss itself. It's in the context of what they've got next. Look at their schedule. At Denver this coming Sunday. At a Miami, the following week they go to Miami. Miami looked exceptional in week one in beating and taking down the Patriots. Yes, just terrific game for them. Very promising for their offensive line. Very promising for Sean Moreno, former Bronco, and also, you know, and also Ryan Tannehill continues to progress. That's going to be a tough game. They come back home for a Monday night game against New England. Then they're at San Francisco. Then they have their bye, and they're at San Diego. That's a six-game gauntlet to start the year. I think they would have been happy at 3-3 after those six games. But that 3-3, I think part of their equation involved beating the Titans at home. Titans team that had struggled last year, but it ended, you know, obviously didn't work out that way. We talk about the injuries. And Tennessee, when Jake Locker is healthy, Tennessee is a good team. We saw this at the start of last year. Until Jake Locker got hurt, they looked like a team that was going to push for a wild card berth, and then he went down, and so too did the team. So the Chiefs had the misfortune for them of getting the good Titans with, you know, with Locker having a very good game. And now, I mean, you know, they're going to be under a lot of pressure. You know, they're, you know, it may be week two, but I think you're going to see playoff-like intensity from the Chiefs Sunday at Sports Authority Field at Mile High, because, you know, what they've got looming is daunting. And, you know, you don't like to call a week two game a must-win, but this is pretty close to it for the Chiefs.
Of course, we have the Kansas City Chiefs coming to town to Denver on Sunday afternoon at 2:25 Mountain Time, taking on the Broncos at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. They're a little banged up with the losses on their defense, but still supposed to be a good matchup. Going head-to-head within division, a rivalry, it should be a very good game, but they are going to be missing a lot with the loss of Derek Johnson. How the Broncos take advantage losing him and having Julius Thomas coming off a great game where he can kind of go into the slot and up the seam and force them into some difficult decisions?
Well, first of all, one of the two times they played the Chiefs last year, Julius Thomas didn't even play. When they beat him in Kansas City in week 13 last year, that was the second game that he'd missed. So, you know, the Broncos were good enough to put up 35 points on the Chiefs last year, even without Julius Thomas. So this is going to make things more challenging. I think you'll see Eric Berry get involved. He's the he's obviously the Pro Bowl safety and one of the elite players they still have on defense. James Michael Johnson is going to replace Derek Johnson in the lineup, but there's questions about him in coverage in particular. So I think using Barry might be an option. The only problem is you want to have Barry available to do other things. You want to have him working in the box against the run. You want to you want to have him kind of as that I don't want to say a freelancer, but he's a guy that you want to have moving around and not devoted necessarily to one guy. So that's going to be a challenge. The other thing with Kansas City, they had an 11-5 finish last year, but this is not a team that carried a lot of positive momentum into the off season. They went 2-5, 2-6 down the stretch if you count their playoff loss to Indianapolis. In that prism, an opening day loss at home, a mild surprise, but maybe not the biggest surprise, because they staggered home toward the end of the season when their schedule got much more rigorous. And now, with this game, this is almost a must win for the Chiefs, because you've got Miami coming up, and Miami looked good in week one. You have New England, they've got San Francisco, San Diego down the line. This is a very tough opening six games for the Chiefs, and they've got to do something to reverse their course. Otherwise, they're going to be in a hole that they can't get out of.
their defense will be a pretty big focus. You know, they gave up 405 yards to the Titans last week. A lot of the focus for the Broncos is always on their passing offense, but the Chiefs gave up 162 yards on the ground last week. The Broncos have been looking to get their ground game going a little bit themselves with Monte Ball. They spoke a little bit about how they want to get him moving on first down a little bit more. For them, an efficient first down gain on the ground, they said, is about 4 or 5 yards. They want to get into those second and five, second and six situations, take a little bit of the pressure off. Do you think they can get that going against this defense?
Possibly, but it's going to be a challenge. I mean, they, obviously we talked about how they lost Derek Johnson. They've also lost Mike DeVito for the season, but they still have Dontari Poe at nose tackle, and he's the biggest reason why the Chiefs have a pretty strong run defense for the most part, although it did struggle last week against Sean Green and Dexter McCluster, the former Chief who's now in Tennessee. You know, Poe will take up two blockers consistently, really opens things up for the linebackers to make plays. So, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, that's, you know, you look at the interior of the Broncos line, you know, Manny Ramirez and then Orlando Franklin in his second regular season game at left guard, and then Luis Vasquez at right guard. I think they're going to use Dontari Poe to try to test Ramirez and Franklin in particular in their second game working side by side on the interior. And how they hold up may well determine how effectively the Broncos can run and whether they can get to that four to five yards per carry range, especially on first down.
One of the things that will be interesting is that this Kansas City offense looks to be a good deal different than what it showed in week one. You have Dwayne Bowe coming back off of suspension, and you have Jamaal Charles after getting 7 rushes and 11 total touches in the first game. He's probably going to be a little bit more of the focus of the offense than they had done in week one. I talked to TJ Ward in the locker room on Thursday about how they game plan with not having any film from this season, this one game, to kind of look back on. But he said it's not the biggest deal. They have last year's film. Everything changes from week to week, so they're not exactly going to be looking at this as a kind of a blank slate where they can't take anything away from the past. They will be looking back at that film from last year as a basis for what they expect in week two.
Yeah, and you know, Jamaal Charles has a pretty lengthy history of outstanding performances against the Broncos. 120 yards from scrimmage last year in week 13. Only not a great game for him. When they played in Week 11, he only had 72 yards from scrimmage on 18 touches. But, you know, we think back to the game at the end of the 2009 season when he had 259 yards, still, you know, the most against the Broncos since the year 2000. A couple more 100-yard games on the ground alone, including one as recently as November of 2012. You know, Denver's had a lot of trouble with Jamaal Charles, but not in the same way that other teams have had trouble with him. When you think of Jamaal Charles, you don't just think of what he does, you know, on handoffs. You think of what he does, in the open field. You think of what he does on screen passes. And the last few meetings, the Broncos have done a good job of containing that. Making sure they do that again is going to be crucial. And this is where you may really miss Danny Trevathan, who, of course, is out until next month with the fracture that he suffered on August 12th in practice. You know, Brandon Marshall had a good game last week against the Colts. Nate Irving has shown some very positive signs. I think he's played the two best games of his career, Sunday and then the previous game, Super Bowl 48. But Jamaal Charles presents a lot of problems in the open field, and that's where you're going to miss the ability to go from sideline to sideline as well as Dane Trevathan has. So, you know, Irving and Marshall, I think, have to step up their games a little bit this week to make sure they can contain that threat.
One of the things that Chris Harris said is that no team wants to start 0-2. They're going to be hungry. They're going to be determined to get a win in this first couple weeks. The Broncos are lucky enough to start off their first two games at home. They've got a little bit of advantage there, but they definitely like to avoid what happened last week when they let the Colts back into the game. They got a couple scores late. They came one touchdown within tying the game in the last couple of minutes, and hopefully that won't happen again this week.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's not a bad thing to have a win that comes the way the Broncos win did last Sunday. If you have everything go right, sometimes you get a little bit of overconfidence because you'll get into the film room and, you know, there won't be a lot to it to scrutinize. Whereas the way week one flowed, yeah, it was a very productive win over a very good team. Very nice to have that on your ledger. But at the same time, you know, that you can look at the second half and say, okay, there's so many things that you want to correct from that. So that's the kind of situation that keeps you hungry, keeps you working. And I think keeps you on edge a little bit. You know, it's sometimes it can be unhealthy to have everything go right, because then you can get kind of lulled into a false sense of security and confidence. There's no way the Broncos are going to have that problem coming off the Colt game, because the last 30 minutes, you know, they were pretty soundly defeated. Actually, more than the last 30 minutes, because you could throw in the last 2 minutes of the first half when the Colts drove downfield for a touchdown. So, you know, there were plenty of things they need to work on. We've talked about the running game, how they wanted to work on that and get more consistency out of that. I think they're going to want to get more consistency out of that. We've talked about the defense, some of the things that they need to work on. So, I think the Broncos have the proper frame of mind, knowing that they need to get better. And to go back to your point about the Chiefs, you know, kind of really needing this game to avoid being 0-2. You don't want to start looking ahead with the Broncos, but this is a game they really need too. Yes, they already have the one win in their back pocket, but the next couple of games with a bye week in between, at Seattle, Arizona, at home, that's a very tough stretch to really get them into the meat of the season. So, you know, you don't want to lose this game at home. You don't want to drop any of those home opportunities because of a very rigorous schedule that looms not only in those two games, but also beyond that.
Again, the game is at 2:25 Mountain Time. Be sure to tune in, whether in person or on the TV or on the radio. If people still tune in on the radio, you can do that. But make sure you don't miss that game. It should be a good matchup between two playoff teams from last season.